From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. With the United States becoming the hardest hit nation from COVID-19, concern for how the rest of the world copes with the deadly pandemic has been eclipsed. Sadly, the spread of this dangerous disease has not undercut war and militarism. And in fact, the pre-existing regional tensions and incidents of state violence have left myriad populations far more vulnerable to COVID-19 than they would have been. Joining me to discuss how the military-industrial complex is making the COVID crisis worse is Corey Peterson-Smith, Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. He just published a piece in Common Dreams called How War, Sanctions, and Militarism Made the Coronavirus Crisis Worse. Welcome to the program, Corey.
Thank you so much, Sonali.
One of the wars that you talk about is one that doesn't get enough attention here in the United States, and that is the U.S.-backed Saudi war in Yemen, a war that has gone on for a number of years now, Yemen being one of the most impoverished nations in the world and the poorest in the Middle East. What is happening? I understand that as of now, there's only been a handful of cases actually documented in Yemen of COVID-19.
Right. I mean, it's interesting what's happening in Yemen. There are two things worth noting. The first is that there has actually been an effort among Yemeni warring parties to try to stop the fighting in what has been a really catastrophic war going on for years now. And at the same time as there's a conversation in Yemen about trying to reduce the fighting, the United States is actually continuing its own aggression toward the people of Yemen. And so the United States continues to support Saudi Arabia in their war that they're waging in Yemen. And the United States actually cut off humanitarian aid to people in Yemen. And this was just a few weeks into the pandemic. So it's really at the time when there's a need for greater attention to the humanitarian disaster in Yemen, the United States is actually escalating its aggression. The other thing that's worth noting is that the U.S. has been waging war in Yemen since at least 2002, but in 2015 it backed a Saudi war, Saudi-led war that's actually involved a number of other countries like the United Arab Emirates. And the United States has supplied the aircraft, the weapons, the intelligence, and the fuel. They've done everything in backing Saudi Arabia except pull the trigger themselves. Well, that war, which has largely involved aerial bombardment, has been catastrophic for the people of Yemen. And among other things, it produced a cholera outbreak that was the fastest growing outbreak in modern history. And that cholera outbreak actually continues in Yemen. And so, yes, at the moment, we don't see many confirmed cases of COVID-19 in Yemen. But the conditions that have been produced in Yemen because of this war that the United States has backed and has waged really sets the stage for another disaster for the people of Yemen.
And this is a country that has a very, very poor healthcare system that if it cannot cope with a cholera outbreak, how will it cope with an outbreak of the coronavirus that has crippled industrialized nations? It's also, I imagine, quite possible that there are more incidents of the disease that are not being caught because there may not be adequate testing. Again, the richest country in the world isn't adequately testing its citizens. How are we to know how many are being tested in Yemen? So you're saying that the bombs continue, and this is a war that Congress has actually agreed the U.S. needs to pull out of, but the Trump administration has vetoed Congress's desires on this war, right?
That's right. I mean, there's been really the Trump administration has taken a very aggressive stance across the board in terms of the U.S.'s various conflicts in the world. And that aggressive stance has actually, it hasn't slowed in the midst of the COVID-19 crisis. It's actually escalated. It's a more aggressive stance. It's true that Congress has a number of times now called attention to the fact that this is such a humanitarian disaster in Yemen. At one point, the United Nations called it the world's worst humanitarian catastrophe, and yet the Trump administration goes ahead. And again, that that aggression hasn't slowed in the face of the COVID-19 crisis. You know, in a way, it's straightforward, right, that a war would make things worse when it comes to an epidemic. But you consider the things that a population needs to be healthy. And in particular, you think about what the CDC and the WHO have recommended to stop the spread of COVID-19 in particular, washing our hands. Well, when the sanitary infrastructure of a country has been destroyed, as it largely has in Yemen, that is not possible for many people. When the malnutrition is such that people are not getting the nutrients they need, and malnutrition is widespread in Yemen, that means that the population is less healthy to fight any kind of infection, let alone this particularly fast-spreading one. So, and the other thing I'll say is that the kind of displacement that we've seen, the people internally displaced within Yemen, whole populations being forced to move across the country, that has been one of the things that has spread cholera. And so all of these things really point to a deadlier spread of coronavirus should it come to the Yemeni population.
And then we also have nations like Iran, which is suffering from crippling sanctions. Iran early on became one of the hotspots globally of the disease after China. It was a country hardest hit before Italy gained the spotlight for the number of deaths there. And I understand the U.S. has, far from actually trying to ease up on sanctions, just doubled down on them.
That's exactly right. In Iran, you know, unfortunately, I should say that what we've seen since the outbreak in Wuhan is the repeating of a pattern all across the world in which medical professionals call attention to this disease. Government officials suppress what should be a response to that disease and make it worse. We saw that happen in China. We saw that happen in Italy. We've seen that happen in Iran. And we've certainly seen it happen perhaps on a larger scale here in the United States. Well, in Iran, it is the case that, as elsewhere, there were certain mistakes made earlier on that made this worse. But the fact is that the economic sanctions that the United States imposes upon Iran, and sanctions that they say are targeted, but in fact have involved Western banks being discouraged from doing business with Iran, have involved various countries in the world being discouraged from trading with Iran. It means that the Iranian economy was in a real crisis before this the epidemic happened, before it came to Iran. And now there are really basic materials that the Iranian pharmaceutical industry, for example, doesn't have. That it needs to cope with the spread of the disease. The kind of shortage of things that we've seen here in the United States, again, the wealthiest country in the world, Iran is being hit hard as well. And so it's really at this point the economic sanctions, which have dramatically made this crisis worse in Iran. And as you pointed out, the U.S. is not considering lessening those in the face of the crisis. It has actually escalated the sanctions. In addition to the sanctions, the sanctions are part of what the U.S. calls, what the Trump administration calls, its maximum pressure campaign. And so the sanctions are a central part of this, but not the only part. We know that the U.S. began this year, 2020, by assassinating an Iranian general. And more recently, the U.S. has actually sent warships off the coast of Iran, both to the Arabian Sea and to the Persian Gulf. It sent the two aircraft carrier groups to the Arabian Sea actually nearly 2 weeks before it sent a hospital ship to New York City to respond to the center of the outbreak there. So not only is it evident that the U.S. has prioritized war making and aggression over even responding to this disease and how it impacts the U.S. population, but it is singling out Iran in particular at precisely the time when Iran really needs international cooperation and needs the sanctions lifted.
I also should mention that Somalia is a country where the U.S. has had aggressive militarism, drone wars, and this is a country that the U.S. has continued to bomb in the, you know, midst of this pandemic. This is something that's not getting very much attention at all. And, you know, I would be shocked if even a small percentage of Americans, A, knew that we were bombing Somalia, and B, knew why we were bombing Somalia. Again, a country that likely is going to have trouble with the COVID-19 pandemic, given that it is a poor nation that is racked by years of war, much of which the U.S. has contributed to. All of this happening at the time when countries like the United States and European nations are vilifying the refugees that are created from these wars that we fight in, refugees that are now vulnerable to this pandemic, and then who are scapegoated for bringing the virus to their shores, which is not clear that, that's happening, and also then for hoarding supplies and resources and pushing aside these vulnerable populations that have been made vulnerable because of this, these Western-backed wars. There's a lot more evidence to suggest that the virus is actually being spread by wealthy business people who've traveled all over the world. For example, in China, there's a new wave of infection now because of people, business people returning from Russia, bringing the disease back. Ecuador has had infections because of people traveling from Italy and Spain. So all of this is happening at a time when there's refugees that are created by these wars that are being demonized and vilified. There was an interesting article about how in France, refugees are now stepping up to say, I was a doctor in my previous life, and I can actually be of use and help you with this crisis. I mean, shouldn't we in the West be seeing refugees as a silver lining at this time of crisis?
You know, I really do hope that that this crisis can be a context for a new set of conversations in every country, especially the United States, about the humanity of people everywhere, and in particular displaced people and refugees among them. I mean, one of the things that we're seeing is that there's been a number of draconian policies. Militaristic policies, whether we're talking about the pursuit of war, whether we're talking about arming militaries, whether we're talking about more power to police with less accountability, and whether we're talking about the militarization of borders, those things were trends that were taking place in this country and in countries all around the world before the pandemic. The pandemic has become an opportunity to escalate those. And so governments that were already restricting the flow of all migration and refugees in particular have a new excuse to say, oh, we've got to close the borders because of COVID-19, when in fact they were restricting the flow of people across the borders anyway. So among other things, what that has produced are these makeshift camps. You know, people, most likely your viewers will know that at the US-Mexico border on the Mexico side, because there have been so many, such large numbers of people, asylum seekers, refugees, of migrants coming north, particularly from Central America, though not exclusively, up through Mexico to try to enter the United States at the southern border, and the US has not let them in. The U.S. has not only continued to fortify its existing wall, but has created a set of policies, what they call the Remain in Mexico or the Migrant Protection Protocols, policies that they've negotiated with the Guatemalan and Honduran government. These things have made it so that people come to the border and they get stuck there. And there have been a number of informal camps, encampments on the Mexico side of the border. And people there have been exposed to the elements. They don't have running water. They obviously don't have access to the medical care that they need or access to food and so on. And so these groups of people have been vulnerable to all kinds of threats. And now are especially vulnerable to COVID-19. And I'll conclude this point by just returning to what you said, Sonali, about the humanity of refugees that that perhaps new groups of people will see as we all do a lot of reflection in the midst of this crisis. And, you know, that humanity means that these people should have been let into this country a long time ago. They shouldn't have ended up in these horrendous camps. But now, not only because it is the humane thing to do to let people into the country, but also because we all depend on the health and safety of all of us, the policy should change. The U.S. should open its borders and let people in safely and give them the access to testing and healthcare that we all deserve, actually. You know, if there's one thing that we're learning in this pandemic, it's that we really are all dependent on each other. And it doesn't take an epidemiologist to know that a group of people with no access to running water, that group of people is vulnerable to this disease. And as long as it exists in these camps at the U.S.-Mexico border and all around the world, the whole population is vulnerable to this disease. And so for the sake of those people in the camps and for the sake of all of us, it's really time to honor the humanity of displaced people and let them in.
Finally, Corey, do you hope that even though there is a tendency to demonize and devolve into otherism during times of crisis, that because we have more access to information these days, that right-wing propaganda might not have the same impact that it did, disinformation might not have as much impact as it did perhaps in the past, and that people will start to see refugees as real humans, wars and militarism as utterly useless. If they aren't constructive in times of pandemic, they aren't constructive even when pandemics are over, that, you know, this can be this reset moment for a majority of people around the world, and especially Americans whose tax dollars fund so many of these crises.
Right. I do think that there is that opportunity. And I think that those of us who believe in the humanity of the marginalized are going to have to fight to make it that opportunity. I do see these really hopeful efforts. You know, there are people will be familiar with different mutual aid efforts locally, but there have been these efforts, for example, between folks in China and Chinese American churches and other groups, formal and informal, here in the United States. There have been efforts first to send masks and support to Wuhan and other folks in China when the epidemic was unfolding there. And then conversely, there have been efforts at solidarity in the other direction and kind of maintaining those links between folks here, ordinary people here, and ordinary people in China. If the U.S. federal government, of course, is doing the opposite, stoking a kind of animosity. So I do hope that even as politicians and people on the right wing are demonizing Chinese folks and Iranians and others, that the humanity will break through. And truthfully, I think that will be not only kind of seeing that we really are all in this together, and as we are all experiencing this pandemic, but also seeing the failure of this government. I mean, if the Trump administration is trying to blame China for this crisis, that's very obviously meant to deflect from its many disastrous decisions, whether it was the president calling this a hoax, or the utter failure to distribute the supplies that are necessary to actually support medical personnel as they deal with this crisis, including supplies to protect the personnel themselves. I mean, these are failures of government officials here. And so I hope that as people in this country see these officials fail to protect us and see other people around the world struggling with the same things that we are, that yes, our common humanity can break through and we can all kind of envision and fight for a different world as opposed to the world that our so-called leaders preside over.
Corey, I want to thank you so much for joining us today and casting some light on this issue that's really been ignored here in the United States. We'll post a link to your article from our website. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Take care.
My guest has been Corey Peterson-Smith, Middle East Fellow at the Institute for Policy Studies. His latest piece in Common Dreams is called How Wars, Sanctions, and Militarism Made the Coronavirus Crisis Worse. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.